Okay. Thank you. Getting right into it, Kathy's talk is great because it leads straight into, I hope, or most people, what I'm about to talk about at a kind of an aggregate level, looking across an entire workers' comp, state workers' comp system. And that is the long-run impacts of carpal tunnel syndrome on kind of total worker status, their physical, social, financial, and employment status. I want to switch. I have no relations to disclose. So when we look at work-related musculoskeletal disorders, there already have been quite a lot of work has looked at the data that are kind of immediately available in the administrative data systems, in workers' comp data systems, or in hospitalization records. Those have tended to focus on the medical costs for treating the worker, for surgeries, for other therapies, and the indemnity costs, the wage replacement costs that are paid for the worker while they're on total temporary disability before they hopefully return to work. We wanted to extend that scope of the study beyond the immediate workers' comp costs to all the costs that are borne both by the worker, by the employer, and by society as a whole. And we also wanted to look across time to look 6 to 7 years following the diagnosis for CTS to see, where are those workers at that point in their lives? What is the continuing persistent effect of their condition? Okay, I move quickly through. I'm going to have to skip over a couple of slides. I'm sorry if you're in the room and I'm not mentioning your very valuable work here. Apart from just the categories, you can sort of see here the direct workers' comp costs, indirect losses borne by employers. There have been some excellent work done in that. Long-term loss of work capacity, that is inability to return permanently to work, and reduced long-term earnings. Les Bowden and Robert Reville and myself have done some work in this area. I'll skip along, sorry about that. Okay, the study design I wanted to talk about here is a survey design. It's a prospective cohort study looking at comparing the CTS claimant cohort compared to two other cohorts of claimants, one being time loss upper extremity fractures claimants, and the other being claimants with medical-only dermatitis. We chose those two categories. The first category, we wanted to have a category of claimant that had suffered a temporary total disability, but one which we did not expect to see would lead to any long-lasting effects on their workplaces or their households. The second category was as close as we could find in the workers' comp data system to an uninjured worker. Those with a medical-only case of dermatitis. One reason we wanted to use claimants as our comparison groups is because that allowed us to have information on demographics, on their contact information, on their earnings, that we were able to link from another data source. I'll talk about that in a minute. Uninjured workers are really difficult to know anything about other than where they were working. So there's a lot of source of uncontrolled variation, a lot of predictors that are important for determining what a worker's earnings are, such as age and gender, are unavailable if we used those. We administered a survey that I will call these outcome domains. These are aspects of the statuses of the workers that each one of these represents multiple items in the survey. They include the physical health and musculoskeletal function, impacts on their household, financial impacts on the worker and their families, and employment-related or work-related impacts. We included demographic controls for age, gender, education, and marital status, and we administered the survey between 6 and 7 years following the establishment of their claim. Just quickly, the workers' comp system in Washington State is a little unusual. It's a state fund monopoly system that is we cover all but the largest 400 employers in Washington State. We have 170,000 policyholders. It covers about 68% of the workforce. What's unusual in Washington State is the claim is it's a provider reporting based system. So when a worker gets injured, they can choose their own provider. When they go to the provider then screens for whether it's work-related. If it is work-related, then they fill out a report of accident form. The first visit is covered by our system, regardless of whether or not the claim is eventually accepted. So some barriers to getting into the system are lower, I would say, in Washington State than in other cases. Wage replacement is paid after 3 days of time loss, and skip that. I probably should skip this. I don't want to get into the weeds too much here. These were claims that were established back in the early 90s, between 93 and late 94. The claimants had no previous workers' comp claims with the state. We screened out anybody with any previous work-related injury claim. We had 4,443 CTS claimants in that two-year period. It's defined by their ICD-9 codes and the CPT procedure codes. 2,544 upper extremity fractures, about 1,700 derm cases. And then all of these claimants, this 8,700 and some odd claimants, we matched them to their earnings, hours, and employers in the Employment Security database for a 10-year period, 3 or 4 years before the claim to about 6 to 7 years following. This is from an earlier study that just looked at those earnings in the Employment Security. The vertical lines you see sort of in the center there is the quarter in which they had their claim diagnosed. These are their quarterly covered earnings, and you can see them rising as you go from about 2 to 3 years before the claim. You hit the point where they're injured, and then you see the numbers all dropping after that. Now, some of this drop-off is simply natural turnover, people retiring or leaving the state. But what's important to focus on here is the gap between the CTS group, which is the dark blue lines, and the two other claimant groups, the fractures in green and the derm in pink. It opens up and it stays pretty much all the way open. The gap doesn't really close all the way through to 6 to 7 years following. Within this rather grim picture, there are some interesting things when you break out by industry type and by gender. And I just wanted to touch on one. This is looking at the top graph is females, fixed site industries versus non-fixed site industries. And although you see this dramatic drop, this is just CTS, by the way. We've only focused on those in this graph. But you don't see much difference between females on the fixed site industries, that is everything except construction, and the non-fixed site industries, such as construction. But for males, there's a really big industry-related difference between how they fare following the claim. So it's important, I think, the only takeaway from this is it's really important to see that within these aggregate pictures, when you break out by industry or occupation or gender, you see a very different picture of how people fare following this. So with that said, I'm going to skip over that and get back to the survey results. Starting with the immediate workers' comp costs, I'm sorry about the size of this table, but the important thing is that if you look at the columns, we have first the all time loss claims, then just WMSDs, then back claims for comparison, and then the final column is CTS. If you look at the bottom line, the median cost per claim, you can see that CTS claims are one of the most expensive of all the WMSDs. They're about almost three times as expensive as a back claim. So although they are only a little under 3% of the total time loss claims in the state, they are extraordinarily costly. The median time loss days per claim, 96 days as opposed to 37 for backs. So 96 days of time loss, so over 3 months. That's the median. The claimant survey, as you might imagine, 7 years after a claim, there's a tremendous loss to follow-up involved here. And this is one of the limitations, is you can't find people 7 years after their last recorded address and phone number. Out of this 8,760 claimants, we lost about 60% to not being able to find them anywhere in the in their address or phone. We contacted 1,855, of whom about a third declined to be surveyed, yielding 1,255. The four domains of the survey, again, are the health domain. For that, we used the shortened version, the SF-12 version of the physical and mental health status questionnaire, a quick dash survey, which is a survey on musculoskeletal function and symptoms. We examined symptoms, therapies, and continuing use of medication. Under social domain, looked at impacts on the household members' work, on separation of the family, divorce. We looked at relations with the employer and the coworkers, financial impacts on the household income, on the use of non-workers' comp public support systems such as SNAP benefits or SSDI or UI. And then finally, at job-related changes in, are they working or not, part-time, full-time, or less, job changes or changes in the quality of the job as measured by whether the job came with any benefits. Other predictors, as I said, age, gender, marital status. Okay, the respondents and the non-respondents vary in systematic ways, unfortunately. It wasn't not a random selection of people that respond to the survey. And as you might expect, what we found were the people who were sort of in a more stable living situation. We found people that were still, more of the respondents were still working 5 years post-injury than the non-respondents, and that was true across the injury types, CTS, fracture, and derm. More of them had been in stable employment before the claim occurred, and they had higher recovery of earnings back to pre-injury levels than the non-respondents. So on most grounds, they were looking better. So what we are about to talk about is probably an underestimate of the effect. I'm going to jump right into the models. This is just the characteristics of the respondents. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but you can see already the CTS group is characteristically more female, slightly older. And I don't want to get into this because these are all unadjusted, and I just want to get straight into the health outcomes of the regression models. Now, the first three are linear regression models. We're using fractures as the reference category because it's larger and it's more demographically similar to the CTS cohort than the Durham cohort was. But these are the first three lines are the adjusted change in the scale scores for the SF2 components of the SF12 and the quick dash. Quick dash is reverse coded, so higher numbers are poorer musculoskeletal function. And you can see the scale scores are dramatically lower for the physical and the psychological scales for the CTS group. The quick dash scale is showing severe loss of function relative to the fractures group. And this is all current symptoms. These are current statuses, current function questions. This is, how would you rate your ability to carry groceries or to operate equipment, heavy equipment, in the previous week? So, they show much higher usages of prescription medications, symptoms. This is one of several symptoms questionnaires. One of them was on paresthesia. They also showed a similar issue with weakness in the affected body part or in not achieving desired performance at work or at home. On the social outcomes, and I'm only giving a few of the items that were in this, but these are representative of the larger group in the domain. Household members do more housework due to injury. Yes. So it dislocates social roles within the household, having CTS. Spouse or partner increased work hours. This is market work hours due to injury. I have my 5-minute signal going here. Not quite statistically significant, but indicative of some change there. More than twice as likely to be divorced or separated since injury as compared to the fractures cohort. Claimants with this injury type risk job loss. This was to get at, you know, how do people think other people perceive them as injured workers, or people with who have lived with CTS. They view that they are at greater risk for job loss. Employers think this type of injury is fake, that they're malingering in some way. Very much more likely to think that. Financial outcomes, all very similar in magnitudes here. The household income decreases. The claimant's own income decreases. They dip into they deplete savings due to their injury, or they cut or delay major purchases. And they are somewhat more likely to use non-workers' comp sources of public support since an injury. And finally, employment outcomes. Working status, not working versus working. Almost twice as likely not to be working compared to the fractures. The derm cohort is much more likely to still be working. Working part-time versus or seasonal versus working full-time, more likely. The quality of the job, as measured by whether it came with medical insurance coverage, less likely. They're more likely to have lost medical insurance coverage in their current job as compared to their job of injury. And then the next one, same employer, same job, or different employer, different job. After injury, the least disruptive path for them would be to go back to their same employer doing the same job as they were before their injury. They are much less likely to follow that path, and they're more likely to follow the path of greater disruption, having to change to a different employer, starting at a different job after an injury. The predictors that we use to adjust for these outcomes for included gender, age, and married or partnered workers. On gender, women tended to report poorer physical health status and outcomes, a greater impact or dislocation on household work roles, and less impact on their spouse or partner's market work hours. So women tend to get less buffering from having a partner or spouse that could have the ability to increase their market work hours to replace lost income. But their loss of their ability to do work in the household showed a greater dislocation of role. Younger cohorts reported fewer health impacts, but they were more concerned about job loss and in relations with their employer. Married and partnered workers across all injury types had higher SF-12 mental scores and greater economic resilience, greater ability for the household to buffer the shock of the injury. The limitations, I've already talked about some of these. This is a post-claim experience of these cohorts that may not reflect that of a truly uninjured set of workers. It's 6 to 7 years, and so reflects the experience of workers we were able to contact. Limited to the state fund claimants, so we don't get the experiences of workers working for the very largest employers. And no information on the health of claimants prior to the claim, other than the fact that they had no prior workers' comp claim, and they had very similar pre-injury earnings as compared to the fractures claimant. Okay, I think that the key takeaway really is sort of down towards the bottom there. We see, of course, substantial losses for the CTS claimants, suggesting a large cumulative lifetime burden, and that services to provide physical and psychological support, social and workplace support, are very much needed for this cohort. This is 6 years after their claim is closed. We are not providing any continuing help for this. So in addition to, of course, primary prevention, reducing of hazards to prevent CTS, there's a great need for secondary and even tertiary prevention for this, for this set of injured workers. So prioritization of resources based only on workers' comp costs is likely to be a distorted way of approaching setting priorities for funding. I'd like to acknowledge the workers who took the time to work through an extensive survey that was probably not comfortable for them to respond to. Dave Bonato and Felicity Devlin for their comments. And this is a very long-standing project that took many years to complete. And Susan Sama and Preetha Rajaraman were at Sharp during the time that the team was formed and started this project. And I just wanted to acknowledge their tremendous work on this project. So thank you.